How much better was Tim McMahon's question to James Harden as opposed to my question to D'Antoni after game one about Ariza not taking him out after the fourth foul?
Well, McMahon was just citing something the coach had said. That's always tricky. I'm not, I like Tim McMahon a lot. Sometimes I disapprove of that strategy of like giving hearsay in a question.
But he did it, I think, in the right way the last night.
He did it in the right way, but it's still like as a matter of policy.
It's hard.
Well, I'm just looking at it from the player's perspective. And Tom Coughlin and Dom Capers both taught me this lesson was that just don't anytime somebody says, hey, this guy said something, you don't respond to it because you just don't know exactly what they said and in what context it was. And this is how, that's how rumors get started. That's how fights get started. That's how feuds get started, is like when some writer tells you that some guy said something and then you got to respond to that. So, I mean, I thought Harden's response to it was actually perfect, which is like you just diffuse that immediately. Coach says we're soft. Fine, we were.
Landry, can we roll that back real quick? Tim McMahon of ESPN.com. So D'Antoni used the word soft when describing the Rockets' performance last night in Game 3. Here was Tim McMahon asking James Harden about the use of that word last night.
We came out too slow, too soft. Offensively, we didn't have any thrust, and they exploited it. Can't allow it to happen.
D'Antoni described this performance as a team as soft was the word that he used. What's your reaction to that, and how does that happen in a game of this magnitude?
He's right.
Oh, but I guess he didn't respond to how it happens in a game of this magnitude.
Yeah, he did. That's fair.
Of course, well, the cut was cut off after that. Maybe he did respond to it. That was the cut we got.
If I was asking the question, I'd probably ask him that way, because if you say something like, hey, Mike D'Antoni said you guys played soft, there's a different implication perhaps than if you just say, Mike D'Antoni used the word soft in describing the performance, because he literally did use the word soft.
You know what I'd say?
What?
I'd say D'Antoni said y'all soft. I'd throw the y'all in there and then just and then see what happens. Yeah. Just let the fireworks ensue.
Soft. Not what you want to be described.
Is that what you would like? As you brought up the good point that, okay, they came out and they were slugging it back and forth. The Rockets jumped out to an early lead and they looked plenty sharp and they looked plenty engaged. But the true test versus the Warriors is always, okay, what are you going to do? What are you going to do when they hit you with that first onslaught? I thought through the second quarter, they were still fighting and playing hard. And they were missing shots at the rim. They weren't nearly as crisp. The Rockets had adjusted better to... The Rockets made better defensive adjustments from game two to game three than the Rockets did.
I thought... Here's my frustration. Is we can look and go down the list and say, maybe Chris Paul's not the ideal second start against the Warriors. And with Bam Mute being totally ineffective, with Gordon being inconsistent, maybe they can't win this series. Fine. But there's a difference between all those things, which might be right, and the way they look and the fact they lost by 41 points. But whether it was 21, 25, 30, whatever, just getting blown out in a game like that and be frustrated that no matter what things you can say, and all those things are legitimate factors, that this kind of team should be good enough to where they make it competitive against the Warriors in the fourth quarter. Even with all those things working against them, that this team is good enough and has played well enough that they should make a run at this team. Even if you don't win the series, make a run. Make them sweat a little bit last night. And it felt like they were not quite prepared for what they were obviously going to face last night. Again, this Warriors team with Kevin Durant has not lost a home playoff game. They've won 16 games in a row. You knew after a disappointing game two, the kind of effort and focus you'd see from the Warriors last night, you knew what you were going to get out of Steph Curry. And it felt like they weren't quite prepared for that in game three last night.
So what this is what to steal one from Golden State in Oracle Arena, what do you have to do? For one, is just that
hit layups.
Hit layups. And again, that to me goes back to focus. If all they were doing was missing layups and all the other stuff was normal, then I might excuse the missed layups. But when you combine the missed layups with getting out rebounded, with losing the turnover battle, what else am I missing here? Just flat out getting dusted out at the perimeter at times defensively. You combine all that and it speaks to a team that, all right, great, you're facing one of the all-time great teams in the Golden State Warriors. You need to be hyper-focused. You need to be hyper-dialed in. And at some point, yeah, James Harden is going to just have to absolutely go unconscious and unload on them. But I think also you're going to have to get a genuinely inspirational performance out of some of your role players. And the only guy that I'm looking at that like has clear excuses, but that there might be something more in him is Bam Mute. And it's not fair for me to sit here and demand that a guy that's got two dislocated shoulders in a season to all of a sudden be healed and miraculous. But maybe it's as much as like, all right, however weakened you are physically, however bad it is, find a way, some way to just look like somehow your old self. To just gut it up. And I'm thinking of like Ibaka from a few years ago when he played on that sprained ankle and just kind of came out of nowhere when nobody expected him to be able to do anything, and he got it done. And it needs to be that kind of a miracle performance.
Tom Brady is not going to be at the start of Patriots OTAs, according to one of Adam Schefter's sources.
He wants some of this money. He wants some of this this new Matty Ice money is what he wants.
Well, this continues Brady's absence from the team's offseason program. So this is the start of voluntary OTAs, which Brady regularly has been a part of in the past. So here's my the first thing on this. People might say, well, they're voluntary OTAs and all that. I mean, we
but
know
this
that
this is the football portion.
Yeah, this is the
isn't the workouts. Yeah, this is the football portion.
This is the legit portion of this.
This is the quarterback working with his wide receivers on the football field.
Yeah, emphasis on the word quarterback. You never see quarterbacks missing anything when it comes to NFL offseason program kind
unless
of stuff.
There's a contract issue. Because I think Drew Brees, has he not? Has Drew Brees sat out of some OTAs?
I don't know if he sat out of
OTAs. Drew Brees, it's always interesting because it's almost like it was such an ongoing saga with him of yearly standoffs with contract issues that I think he's missed some OTAs before, but people always assume that they're going to figure it out. But regardless, you're right. But when it does happen, it's because there's a contract issue at play. So it's making a whole lot of sense now. All these various little oddities over the last 6 months with the Patriots, maybe Tom Brady maybe trying to engineer a way to get Garoppolo out of there. And now, all of a sudden, Tom Brady maybe in a contract standoff with nobody, without Garoppolo, how much more is Tom Brady's leverage?
Without Garoppolo?
Yeah.
A lot. Because, I mean, it's all about winning now.
With Garoppolo, Tom Brady, he still had leverage. He's still Tom freaking Brady.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have as much leverage. Now,
you can win with Garoppolo.
Yeah, it's Brady or Hoyer. Who are you going with?
So do you think that, Brady has not reported to Patriots voluntary OTAs. Do you think that this is more about his contract or more about just continuing to find ways to let Bill Belichick know that he does not want to be treated like he's been treated the last 15 years and he just wants a little bit of a difference, that he just basically wants to be treated differently now that he is the whatever time MVP and he was the main reason why they were even in contention to compete in the Super Bowl?
Well, I think I'll go back to, I'll accuse you and John McClain of being cynical about this stuff sometimes because you guys will say it's always about the money. Yeah, I think here, I think like all signs point to it being about the money and that Tom Brady is a guy who's taken less than, I think Tom Brady is a guy who's taken far below market value for his services for a long time now in the pursuit of championships. And I think when we talk about the respect and whatnot, I think he probably does feel like, you know what? I was willing to take less money because I was in it for the team and I wanted to win championships and do all that. But I thought there'd be some reciprocity here and that I thought maybe you wouldn't be so cavalier about maybe positioning Garoppolo as the heir to the throne. Like, I'm guessing that he realizes, all right, you know what? There's a time for play and there's a time for pay. And I've been ignoring a lot of the cutthroat sides of this business for a long time. It's time for you guys to pay me. Like, if Matt Ryan's going to make $12 million more a year than me, I'll be damned. I'm going to be making Matt Ryan money.
Seth, maybe I'm being naive on this. I think it's more about the Belichick part. I think that Brady is continuing to
That's what
like,
I just said.
Did you?
Yes.
Did I mistake that?
He wants the respect. Like, he's saying,
but I don't think it's really about the contract. Could be wrong about that. I don't think it's really about the contract. I think he just wants to continue to just let them know that he's not happy and he wants to be treated differently. And I don't think that's even specifically about the contract. I think that's in general. That's all the stuff that you read about, like Belichick would say, well, Johnny Foxborough wouldn't have made that kind of throw. I think that Brady wants that kind of stuff
to stop. So what's going to happen? He's going to get like a special agreement? Like, he's not going to come back unless he gets Bill Belichick to write a note to him and sign it saying, I'll be nice?
Maybe.
Or like, I'm not going to yell at you in front of the squad?
Maybe.
Tommy boy? Yep. I don't know. I don't... Like, okay, now that it's not a holdout because it's voluntary, the next big step would be as if he sat out of a mandatory minicamp.
After Dwayne's situation last year, we need to ask McClain Wednesday, is this a holdout by Tom Brady? What would Rick Smith say?
Rick Smith, well, we don't have a contract situation. We don't have a holdout. He has a contract. This is all fine. The most curious thing ever uttered by a GM in sports was when Rick Smith said that there was no holdout in the middle of a holdout.
The thing
is, like, he Baghdad bobbed the whole thing
for no reason.
All is well.
Yes, for no reason. I mean, there are two things I never get upset about. How angry I was. One was that ridiculous Wattcat play, and two was us being baffled at Rick Smith claiming that Duane Brown's situation was not a holdout. Yes, that was a holdout, and I will go to my grave saying that.
Well, no, there's, of course you would, because it was a holdout.
It was, yes.
It's like, I'm still to this day confused over how people were saying that wasn't a holdout.
713-572-4610. What excited you, Seth, about the Texans defensive line that you saw Friday?
It was just how they looked physically.
Yep.
Because we sat down with Brandon Dunn.
So you had
DJ
Dunn,
Reader
and Watkins on.
Yeah. And they sat down and we've heard all about how they've revamped their whole strength and conditioning and dietary program over there. But there's one thing about I'd always gotten the sense before from talking to some people that there were limited resources available for some of the things that people wanted to do over there. It sounds like they've gone full bore into, like, all right, we're hook, line, and sinker into the sports science stuff, and we're going to go all out. And guys have responded to it really well. And I think those three guys, they all looked svelter to me. And not in a way where, like, oh, they look lighter or anything. They just looked put together better than I'd seen them before. And okay. DJ Reader especially. Like, DJ Reader is a 350-pound dude who does not look like he weighs 350 pounds. Like, Vince Wilfork, you looked at him and you're like, oh, yeah, 350.
Yes.
DJ Reader, I'm looking at him the other day, and I'm like, yeah, he really doesn't look like he's 350, and he's right around, he's in that area. I don't know what he's listed at in the depth. Usually those guys, like Vince Wilfork was listed as 325 forever.
Yeah,
There's no way he was 325.
No way.
Yeah. It seems like 325 is the top cutoff point for a lot of guys. Like, they just don't want to list him as higher than 325.
Don't get me wrong. I'm looking forward to seeing what it looks like in training camp and obviously during the season with this revamped strength and conditioning and the eating and all that stuff that, you know, Vandy keeps talking about when he's on with us every Friday. I guess my only question is, what kind of took so long? What was the impetus for, I'm guessing, O'Brien and whoever else to decide, you know what, we need to make a major change in this area? What led to that?
Well, I think for one, I think injuries.
And just the injuries last year?
I think you have so many injuries, and some of that's always just dumb luck. But there were parts of that strength and conditioning program that, like, I don't like to judge strength coaches from the outside because you never know exactly what they're doing. But there are a lot of old school elements to it, you know, and I think sometimes old school strength coaches are a bit too much about pushing through the pain and just and saying screw it no matter what. And where the newer, well, I'd say newer, like Dan Riley was like ahead of us. Dan Riley is a guy that was there before, and he gets maligned by some people that don't know what he did as like a guy that was just too simple. He was very, very careful about not getting guys injured. And I think now they have a renewed purpose in, like, hey, you're training to keep guys healthy more than just try to increase their max bench.
He's got a high athletic ass.
Yeah, we're talking about Romeo Crennel there.
Speaking of
that's a big thing. What can Luke Richardson do for Romeo? What if Romeo comes out like 265 and shredded? He's out there looking like he's ready to play linebacker or something.
I would need to look at an image and see what that looks like. And see what Romeo would look like.
Get some photos of Romeo in college.
Yeah, I would like to see
that. What did he play? He was an offensive lineman, I think he was.
I don't know what he played. Well, speaking of a holdout, this is exactly what happened probably a little under a year ago when Duane Brown began his holdout with the Houston Texans.
And technically, Mike, it's not a holdout because he's under contract. And we've never found out exactly what he wants.
How exactly is this Duane Brown thing not technically a holdout?
Because to be technically a holdout, you got to not have a contract. And he's under contract. So I learned that decades ago when the Oilers used to have contract disputes several in a year that could last all the way to the trading deadline. I've just called it a contract dispute.
I'm still stuck on this. I
don't want to have a discussion about semantics for 15 minutes. Yeah, and here I am still with this. Why do you keep bringing that up? Like, we've got a good thing going with John. Like, John comes in.
A good thing going.
John comes in on Wednesdays. The last few weeks have been pretty pleasant.
Agreed.
Like, last week you tried to start it up with him over some discussion about the tight ends. You just listen. You just give John the respect he deserves.
I just wanted to expand on the topic more drive into it.
I want you to do this. On the radio, I want you to look at this picture of a young Romeo Crennel and tell me, put yourself in the position of like a young woman in 1970 or something.
I would date a younger Romeo Crennel.
Oh, of course you would. Look at him. Look at him.
Guy.
He looks like
nice hair.
He probably had like a velour
mustache
jumpsuit of some sort and just like out at the discotheque.
That's a suave looking guy.
That's a smooth looking dude.
Yeah. Romeo Crennel, smooth looking guy. All right, coming up in Mad Takes, is this the most improbable sports story of the year. Plus, your chance to win tickets to see the Dan Band this Friday at the House of Blues. Tim Bontemps will help us make sense of what happened to the Rockets last night, coming up at 9:15 from the Washington Post. You're listening to Mad Radio.